hasn't been published yet, as far as I know. It was sent to me piece by piece. You're interested? It's very moving. Very moving. The older I get, the more.
Chesky's a
Lubavitcher. Also, you got to share it with him. The more I appreciate the Rebbe. I didn't turn it on.
Thank you.
You are welcome. When does yesterday's shiur go up on the internet? Do you know? People are bugging me to hear it. I got emails from America. They don't realize there was a snow here, you know. They're just upset that Rakefet didn't give shiur. Go and explain what was going on here. Okay. Alright, we can begin. Today is Monday, December 23rd, 2013. I want to say Boker Tov to all the wonderful people in front of me. And Boker Tov, Tzaraim Tovim, Erev Tov, Laila Tov to everyone across the world listening. Last week, we were here in the history of Torah in the United States. We started this a year and a half ago. And we're rolling. I made the point last time we met that the Holocaust had tremendous implications as far as what was going to happen in America. People were now coming to America not because they wanted to come, but they were coming to save their lives. And many came with a resolution that they would try in America to be exactly like they were in the Alter Heim, in old Europe. America was not going to change them. World War II also taught us a lesson. Particularly, I take the example of my Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik. It influenced his entire life. It ultimately influenced tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of Jews. And ultimately, the only reason we're sitting here is because of 1943. And that, of course, was the March on Washington. The rabbis finally got together, marched on Washington 2 days before Erev Yom Kippur, and hundreds came, and Roosevelt spat in their face, pshuto k'mashmao, refused to see them, sent down Henry Wallace, and as far as it's implications, its impact upon Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, it made him leave Agudat Yisrael. It was the Makkah B'Patish, and ultimately he becomes a great Mizrahiite, and I'm sitting here because of the influence of Mori Rebbe, and one night in time when he gave the famous drasha, which has subsequently been published in many different languages, called Dodi Dofek. So a lot happened, and what Roosevelt did, and it was a gradual process. It made the Jews, the Torah Jews, we got to be more activists, we have to be outspoken, we have to let our opinion be heard. Now, in World War II, what you call Yeshiva University today technically was not Yeshiva University yet. It only gets university status in 1945. It was called Yeshiva and Yeshiva College. And as I explained in great detail, this was a fabulous undertaking. Rabbi Dr. Dov Revel, whose life reads like a fairy tale, and I strongly advise that, I understand the fourth edition is coming out of Rothkopf's book, Bernard Revel Mulder of American Jewish Orthodoxy. It's the best investment you can make, particularly if they sell it together with the Silver Era, which is also coming out in the fourth edition. It's the best investment you can make. If the author winds up with two pennies out of it, that'll be a small miracle. You don't know what goes on in Lower Lane. If I would tell you the check I got for Washington to Washington, I've never dealt with publishers like this, where they don't tell you how many books they sold. They just tell you what they spent on your book and what they took in. I wound up with about 200 shekel for a whole year. Sure, what they took in, they had to send the books to America. They're ordered in Chicago. Let's say two books are sent back. All that goes against you. I never saw anything like it. But thank God, Ichlach Sichais. Anyone here from the Sephardic world, I'll translate. I'm at the stage in life where I can laugh. Money, thank God, is meaningless. I have enough bread and water for the rest of my life. And when all is said and done, you don't need much more than bread and water. So, Baruch Hashem. what Rabbi Revel did was unbelievable. And why you, and I'm saying why you anachronistically, forgive me, why you was on the map, there is some slight opposition in Brooklyn, Tehrivadas, but it's not a real opposition. They're more open-minded than we are. They're more liberal. But we're brothers, we're brethren. And you have students going back and forth. Students from Torah Vadas, Rabbi Yosef Weiss, should live and be well, my only Rebbe who's still alive, is a prime example. He came from Torah Vadas and came to Yeshiva and Yeshiva College. Reb Moshe Bick, later the great posek in the Bronx, graduate of MTA, graduate of Yeshiva and Yeshiva College, a musmach of the Yeshiva. It was wide open. There were individuals who left Yeshiva, wanted a more Hasidic background, so they went to Torah Vadas. Everyone went to college. Torah Vadas, Chaim Berlin, RJJ, you name the Yeshiva High School, MTJ, Tiferet Yerushalayim. Everyone went to college afterwards. Everyone went to work. Out of these students from all these yeshivot came world famous rabbonim, unfortunately conservative rabbis as well, reform rabbis as well, graduates of Torah Vadas. You want one fine example, I'll give you a simple example. Harry Scherer, the only Scherer alive, three brothers, the guy who was conservative, God took first, the man who built Agudat in America, Moshe Scherer, Morris Scherer, fabulous individual, good friend of mine, God took him second. Harry Scherer, who's a Torah Vadas graduate and became a Reform rabbi who performed intermarriages, Jew and Gentile, still alive and kicking, must be well into his late 90s. I had endless correspondence with him when I was working on the research for Washington to Washington, and his handwriting at the age of late 80s at that time was no different than it was when I first met him in 1947. Just amazing. Then you have graduates became medical doctors, became dentists, became business people. Graduates who won Nobel Prizes. You have no idea what came out of this world. Then World War II came. And America now, like we explained in yesterday's shiur with the Erev problem, it's a new Jew in America. And you have Hasidic Rebbeim, but the Hasidic world is insular. They did not really affect the length and breadth of American Torah people. But the Litvish world, and particularly one name, Reb Aaron Cutler, no one had more influence than what would happen after World War II than Reb Aaron Cutler. You may want to make an argument the Rav also had great influence, but these were diametrically opposed. And this leads us into a problem that has haunted us since 1762. It's a problem which is at the headlines of every Jewish newspaper in the world. It's a problem that is going to shortly be headlines in the New York Times. It's a problem that anyone in this room and anyone listening across the world whose heart beats with a Jewish beat has to deal with this problem. What does God want out of us? The greatest mitzvah, the most important mitzvah, the basis of our being Jews, the Talmud Torah keneged kulam. We are a different religion. We're not a religion. We're a peoplehood. We're a nation. Religion is part of it. Friday night at the Kotel, at our minyan, there was a man sitting there, must be in his 40s. So when we were counting heads to Davin Mincha, we asked him, can he join us? He said he's not Jewish. He's South African. But he wants to join us anyway. He knows he can't be counted for a minyan. Very intelligent man. He wanted to pray with us. He had a siddur. They published the Kotel siddur, if you know what that is, with English, with Hebrew. And my cousin, Baba Yair, said, Rabbi, take charge. They sat him down next to me. and I helped them, you know, showed them what we're davening, what mincha is, what shema is, what before that lachadodi and welcoming, and it's a different world. And then he knew, he's very close to Rabbi Medalia in Peoria. Rabbi Medalia, I told him right away, that has to be Lubavitch. He said, absolutely. I recognized the name. I knew who Rabbi Medalia's grandfather was. So these were Hasidim of the sixth Rebbe. So we got to talking, and you know, I told him, we can't proselytize. We're a very different religion. He said, he knows. I said, you know, if you say to me you want to become a Jew, I have to tell you, you're an idiot, you're a moron, you're crazy. The Gemara in Yavama, Tafmim Vavamid Betmim, Zaymon Amid Aleph. He knew the Gemara, he said, he knows. Rabbi Medalia told him. I have a feeling he's on the way to Judaism. But what's so unique about our religion? I grew up in a neighborhood that was one-third Italian Catholic, one-third Irish Catholic, and one-third Jewish. So when I got Sonsino, I was a kid, I brought up the Sonsino on Tanakh. My father shows the Psalms in English, Sonsino, to our Catholic neighbor. She goes like, not allowed to look at it. The priest has to give her permission. And you see, these religions thrive on obedience. The people don't study, the people don't know, the people don't learn. It's a different religion. The Catholic religion has a Talmud, has Shas, has Paiskim, has a Siyum Shas every 7 years. Just think, people learning. All right, learning. I'm not ashamed to admit that my whole life is scheduled around learning. Okay, Baruch Hashem. So it's a different concept. The Talmud Torah, Gita Bayomim V'Laila. No? Why did I say 1762? You only 1762 we come out of the ghetto. Moshe Mendelssohn. It's an arbitrary date, but that's the date Moshe Mendelssohn is rewarded by the local ruler in Berlin, and he won this contest. His essay on philosophy was selected as number one in all of Germany, and he honors this Jew, this hunchback Jew. You can live outside the ghetto. And Moses Mendelssohn comes outside the ghetto, 1762, and from that moment until today, we face the tremendous challenge. How do we balance out living outside the ghetto and Talmud Torah? Do we learn day and night? All right, if you learn day and night, how do you make a living? Or have bitachon? When I learned in Lakewood, they said, what? They smacked my face when I asked the question. And they said, what? You don't have bitachon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Moshe Chaim, am I right or wrong? And they said to me, every month there'll be a check in your mailbox. All right, is that so? Don't prepare. Don't have a profession. Just this morning, a guy walked into shul at my minyan. We daven, we're a very early minyan, and I pressed the guy in charge. We should begin a little later now. The sun rises later. We're going to begin 5 minutes later next week. So a guy walks in. We get very few collectors, because to wake up that early, pardon me, Duffman Sein, good Meshuggah, you have to be crazy. I admit, you have to be crazy in love with learning to wake up at 4:30 and start learning. Fabulous. And so we get very few collectors. This morning we got a collector. This guy is learning, sitting and learning, and he has to support a family, and he handed out literature. And he's collecting, and you know that many people, if you've ever been in Lawrence on a Sunday, if you've ever been in Beverly Hills on a Sunday, if you've ever been in Hendon on a Sunday, if you've ever been in Melbourne on a Sunday, to quote the Gemara, Satna di Arachadhu, the world is one. People are coming around collecting. Well, how do you balance this out? And it goes way beyond, for the sake of argument, all right, mathematics, physics, science, we can understand. Perhaps you have to know, you have to understand. The more you know, the more it helps with understanding Masechet Eruvin, the Gemara. You have to know mathematics, Masechet Chulin, you have to know autonomy. Tell me, what if you're interested in English literature? I think that one of the greatest Jews alive in this moment in time, someone I know since 1951, his name is Reb Aaron Lichtenstein. I think he has a PhD from Harvard University in English literature. By the way, in parentheses, I'll tell that it's not for the class, because to elaborate on this would take an hour, but I'll tell you a fabulous story. You know, you have to reveal what you know, because otherwise it's lost forever. When Rabarim gets his PhD, he tells the Rav, you know, every Friday night he learned with the Rav in Boston. He tells Rebbe, I got my PhD this week. And the Rav says, what did you get it in? And he says, English literature. The Rav says, not physics, not mathematics. And Aaron says, Rebbe, if you would have told me, I would have gotten it in one of those fields. But it's a tremendous, that little conversation you can analyze for hours. But these are real problems. And tell me, what about, let's go one step further. We live in a world, what are you wearing there? That's a Beitar, what team is that?
Israel National Team.
Here, you got a sports fan here. Gentlemen, leisure time. I know a guy named Rakefet. What he knows in baseball, you guys don't even understand one word. He'll talk to you about DiMaggio, Keller, and Henrik, and what Robinson Cano just did to destroy the sport. It's no longer a sport. You cannot root for a team. You have to root for players today, because the player will remain. The team, I can't even start to figure out the names of the Yankees next year. Beltran, Schmeltran, this one, that one. When I was growing up, you knew a player for at least 15 years. You didn't have to learn a different player. He was there. There were teams. Now, free agency destroyed the world. Tell me, you go to a Yankee game, you go to a Met game, you go to an Oriole game in Baltimore, you go to the Marlins in Florida, kosher food at the stadium. In the Marlin New Park, one of the owners is Hashem Shabbos. He grew up in Boston. He went to Maimonides. He was a devotee of the Rav. One of the owners. He built a shul. You no longer daven mincha or marav, depending upon the time of the game, outside the kosher food concession. He built a little shul. You go, I was in a game in Yankee Yankel Stadium. I saw, I would say, tens and tens, if not hundreds, of Satma Hasidim at the game. Leisure time. And I was with people. I said, take a look at these stomachs. He says, there's a wonderful Jew. He says, no, it's good for them. He said, they don't go to Broadway shows. They don't see movies. They don't know what television is. I think they do know, but he thought they didn't know. And he says, but here, they can go to a Yankee game. They're integrated. I told you, I don't know if I told you yesterday when I dedicated the shiur to Rebbetzin Fishman, who just died. It's very moving for me because that brings me back to my youth. Rebbetzin Fishman, Shanghai survivor, Reb Henoch Fishman's wife, just died last week. And I took Heshi Zichrona Levracha, that was their oldest son, I took him to his first Yankee game. I came home and told Reb Henoch, today your son became an American. He sat in Yankel Stadium and we cheered Joe DiMaggio. Hashem, that's a big thing. Gentlemen, where do you draw the line? What are we taught? This is a very serious problem. If you haven't dealt with this problem, you are not a good Jew, plain and simple. This is a very serious problem. Where do you draw the line? What about making a living? And what about if someone comes to you and says you're a Rebbe in YU, and he says, Rabbi Twesky, Rabbi Schechter, Rabbi Willing, I'm interested in Chinese literature. No? What do you tell him? What are you wasting your time? That's a difficult subject till you get a doctorate, till you master Chinese. Become an accountant and learn. You'll have more time for learning. These are serious questions. Now, I cannot tell you how much these questions have troubled us and haunted us. And as I said, you all know what's going on today in the state of Israel. This is at the heart of the very controversy. The army's Milchamet Mitzvah. How can you not serve in the army? I don't know how any Jewish boy living in Russia a good Jewish boy? Because if a boy lives in America, he is not a good Jewish boy. You are not allowed to live in America today. They don't observe the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach. You're living in a country where Obama is the president, where the New York Times rules, where Akefet will be arrested because he's against same-sex marriages. He quotes the Gemara in Chulin, Daf Sadi Bet, right or wrong, Russia, Baruch Hashem, Putin, there you live. So, but I don't know any heter in the world for a Jewish boy growing up in Moscow, growing up in the Ukraine, growing up in Maplewood, New Jersey, growing up in Toronto, not at the age of 18, not to report to the Israeli Defense Forces, Milchemet Mitzvah, there are no exemptions. I got news for you. According to the Mishnah, even women have to serve in the army. Right or wrong, the Sugyan Sota, Daf Memchei, right or wrong, Mendalet Memchei, Chatan V'Kala. Okay, could be women are not fighters. They have to go into the kitchen, run the kitchen. Today's feminists wouldn't like that. No, we're going to serve exactly as the men. Fine. These are serious problems. Where do you draw the line? What is Talmud Torah, etc.? Now, to be honest with you, I could continue lecturing on this topic and throwing around sources and throwing around knowledge for many, many months to come. But that's not my goal. My goal is, I want to zero in on one individual right now. The first great Rav, who was a gaon adir, his bikiyut, if you look at his parish on the Torah, you look at his parish on Vayikra, which involves kadshim v'taharot, you'll see who Rav Shimshon ben Raphael Hirsch was. He was a gaon adir. And he was the first one, more than anyone else, to step up and claim loud and clear, a Jew has to conquer the world. I quote Rav Hirsch now from his Gesammelte Schriften, his collected writings. He put out a monthly Yeshurin, fighting for Torah when all of Germany was reformed. Who put us into the ghetto? We didn't choose to live in the ghetto. We were forced into the ghetto. The goal of a real Jew, Yafe Talmud Torim Derech Eretz, Milu et Haaretz V'Kivshuha. We have to conquer the world. The more knowledge, the better. And he was a very universal individual. He loved German literature. And remember, this is Germany was the high point of enlightenment in the world. We're talking the 1800s. This is Germany that later Mori Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Nechama Leibovitch, Professor Avraham Yehoshua Heschel, Rav Yitzchak Kuttner, Rav Chaim Heller, Rav Yaakov Weinberg. Look how many East Europeans ran to Germany in the 10s, the 20s, the 30s, the high point of civilization. And look what came out of Germany 2 years later, 3 years later. It's unbelievable. But Rav Hirsch fought the battle. And you look at the curriculum. Heck, Chesky, have you ever looked at the curriculum that he proposed for schools? It looks like Ramaz. It looks like Fatless Yeshiva. It looks like, believe me, when I went to MTA, our curriculum was not so innovative. We learned Gemara half a day. Then we did our subjects for the regions. Get a high school degree. Rav Hirsch's curriculum. An hour of Bible, an hour of mathematics, an hour of Mishnah, an hour of German literature, an hour of Talmud, an hour of German history, world history, totally integrated. And he had very interesting concepts. All the general subjects could only be taught by religious Jews or non-Jews who practiced their religion. He wouldn't expose the children to irreligious Jews. But this was his goal. This was Torah Derech Eretz. And Rav Hirsch comes to Frankfurt. He had been rabbi of a big district in Prussia. He had kavod. He had parnasa. He had everything that counted. And in the early 1850s, he gave it all up to come to Frankfurt, where there was barely a million of Jews left. Frankfurt am Main. There are two Frankfurts in Germany. FAM. Barely a million of Jews left to put on tefillin. He described the mikveh in Frankfurt, and I always go with the klal. My Rebbe once said in public at a Yahrzeit Russia, if you want to check if a woman's a balabasta, look at the way the lavatory in the house is. He said, the check at the living room, that's not a good check. Everyone keeps a nice living room that's fancy, that's where you entertain. But look at the bathroom. So I always paraphrase Rebbe, if you want to check the religious commitment of the community, look what the mikveh looks like. And I still recall, my wife still used the old, the only mikveh in Philadelphia, Hashem Yerachem, in South Philly. No wonder so little Yiddishkeit came out of Philly until later, until the 1980s, I would say. But he describes the mikveh in Frankfurt, I called Rav Hirsch now, it's in an alleyway located in such a filthy, dirty passageway that you might think only swine would walk through here, not human beings. And he comes to this community and he totally turns it around, turns around German Orthodoxy, waves the banner Torim Derech Eretz, very prolific pen. His perish to Chumash, his perish on mitzvot, Chorev, the Yeshurin later, I believe it's 9 volumes, we have it downstairs in the Beis Medrash translated into English, Gesundheit, 9 volumes of collected writings. What an individual. So now let me ask a question. Rav Hirsch, how do you view him? How do you view him? In Panovich, in Lakewood, perhaps in parts of Mir, Mir is a very big conglomeration. In Torat Moshe, in Torat Shraga, in Bells, in Ger, you're going to find many Rabbeim and many Mashbiim and many Mashgichim who will tell you, don't waste your time on college. Don't waste your time on general studies. Learn Torah day and night. Be great in Torah, Vegita, Bayom, and Velayla. And then you will ask the question, tell me, how do you relate to Rav Hirsch? How do you relate to Rav Simcha Ful Hirsch? How do you relate to Torah im Derech Eretz? And here we come to one of the most fascinating questions that turned up so many contradictory answers right here and now. And an attitude to Rav Hirsch ultimately has great contemporary impact on every Jew. Now, let me begin at the beginning. I want to quote from a sefer that we quoted, I don't know if it was in the Monday class or the Sunday class. You should recognize the name. Dayan Grunfeld. Dayan Isidore Grunfeld was one of the few Jews that survived the Holocaust, wound up in England. I actually think he got to England in the late 30s. Was a lawyer. And they pleaded with him, to become a member of the British based and give up his law degree, and was a what happened?
Oh, it was on the Rebbe's fleece.
But oh, I see. Do me a favor. You can turn off the. If you don't mind, let's turn it off for a while. It's up too high. When I walked into the room at 6:45, it was freezing, so I put it up high, and it did its job. They pleaded with Diane Grunfeld to become a member of the London based, and he was one of the few Hirschians who remained loyal to Rav Shmuel Rafael Hirsch, who did not shift his position. Now, you know all Diane Grunfeld. He translated Chorev into English. He wrote a beautiful introduction to two volumes called Judaism Eternal, in which he put together many of the essays of Rav Hirsch that are later republished by Feldheim in the collected writings. He chose and put out two volumes, Judaism Eternal, with a brilliant introduction. He also wrote a little book. That little book may be more important than anything he ever did. The book is called Three Generations. The influence of Samson Raphael Hirsch on Jewish life and thought, published in London in 1958. Now, why was this book written? Because after World War II, there was a major swing against Rav Hirsch. Many people started to view him as a stopgap method, but not a legal, rational, honest presentation of Torah. In other words, he came along, what we would say, b'diavad, had no choice. Everyone is going to college anyway. Everyone is looking for a profession. Everyone wants to live in dignity outside of the ghetto. You have a choice. Torah doesn't really believe this, but it's better at least to have Derech Eretz as long as you'll have Torah with it. But really, Torah iba alles. Torah is above everything. Torah and only Torah. Any other approach is a compromise, is a watering down of the real Judaism, the real Torah lifestyle. Chaim Grunfeld felt threatened. And he published this little volume, Three Generations, where he shows you who Rav Hirsch was, the influence of Rav Hirsch, the viewpoint of Rav Hirsch, and how if not for Rav Hirsch, the Jews would not have survived living outside of the ghetto. And he has a seminal message here that the only way to go outside the ghetto is to follow Rav Hirsch. Now, beginning on page 47, he tells a story, and this story is very important for us, because without this story, we would not understand a lot of rabbinic literature that I'm going to quote. But in order to appreciate the story, I have to give you a little background. And I'll illustrate it by something that happened. My good friend, Harav Rakefet, taught an interesting class yesterday. And at the start of class, he related to a question that he didn't touch upon during the press conference. And that question was very simple. It's already on websites. Why doesn't Harav Rakefet relate to the new Mashgiach at Yeshiva University, who happens to be Rav Kepitz Talmud, Rabbi Moshe Weinberger, and here you see they're advertising this kumsitz, this get together, 11 o'clock at night. Now you fellas try to tell me it had to be 11 to get guys from the other yeshiva, that's fine. But minishamayim zikunu, it's fabulous at 11 o'clock, because that's when Hasidic Rebbeim begin. I just read about the Rebbe in Antwerp, the Pashkvila Rebbe, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. And then here's Motzai Shabbos at 11 o'clock at night. This first getting started. The Malava Malka begins, what is it, 1 a.m.? Oh, and that picture. And the boys asked me, how do you relate to that? A Litvak, look what's happened to YU. YU, a bastion of Lithuanian Torah. And I told the fellas very honestly that had this question been asked in 1955 of my Rebbeim, Gidolei Yisrael, Rabbi Yeruchim Geralek, make believe you heard these names so the even pass for the wise, who has not heard of Rabbi Yeruchim Geralek? Rabbi Noach Bornstein, alright, he was a little less known, but if you read about the Briska Rebbe, you hear those Shehurim from Rakefet over the decades, you'll know Rabbi Noach Bornstein. These were giants of Torah. If I would have shown Rabbi Noach Bornstein this, he would have looked at it and said, make a lagboma fire and toss it in. Rabbi Yeruchim Geralek would have gone crazy. You got to know Rabbi Yeruchim from the pulpit. He would have been dancing around. He would have been yelling, spitting, cursing, maledicting, all in one sentence. But you see, it's 2015 today. It's not 1955. And I have a different approach. I'm not a chassid. And I don't know the literature that my Talmud, Rabbi Moshe Weinberger, he knows. Quotes Hasidus, quotes Rav Kook, quotes the Eish Kodesh, quotes endless Sparim. It's a different world. I don't know that world. But today, the youth needs more. It can't take the world in which I grew up. It's a different time. Different generation. I'm a dinosaur today. I recognize that. I'm proud to be a dinosaur. You're not going to change me. I live with the Rav. I'm still a kid entering YU 1951. But I recognize the new generation needs Fahrenheit, chassidus, warmth, has questions. I'm not going to take the answers my generation took. Dar dar vidashav, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin Daf Lamed Chet, I believe it is. Every generation needs a slightly different tinge, a slightly different hue, a slightly different coloration. And I recognize my grandchildren already are not like their grandfather. It's a different world. So I can understand if this helps some students. Adoraba the Adoraba. Wonderful. Give them choice. The fellas who were brought up on the Hirshian path, and they developed Rav Hirsch Elementary School, Beit Sefer Reali, a famous high school. Then it went further. The famous rabbinic school in Berlin organized 1873. The Berlin Rabbinical School for Orthodox Judaism, popularly known after the name of its founder, Hildesheimer, because Rabbi Dr. Israel Hildesheimer was the one who organized it. Fine. Wonderful rabbis came out of there. You didn't get ordination till you got a PhD from a neighboring university. And you had entire families, names that you know, the Karbach family. Shlomo Karbach, where did he come from? He didn't grow up on a tree. He grew up in a very wonderful rabbinic home. His father was Rav Naftali Karbach. His uncle was Reb Yosef Kalbach, the Rav of Hamburg, perished in the Holocaust. A giant. Had many other relatives. The Monk family. You all recognize the name. Many other families. Hildesheimer himself, his family. And students flocked there. And you know something? Following World War I, something amazing happened. German rabbis came into Poland, came into Russia with the German army. Germany was a different Germany then. This is why many Jews didn't run away. They figured, how bad can the Germans be? They remembered them from World War I, where they came in, there were no pogroms, the Jews were treated with respect. Roll Rabbi Dr. Lieutenant Colonel Rosnack, Kalbach, these were chaplains. And many of the soldiers were devotees of Rav Hirsch, Jewish boys, Shomer Shabbos. And they come into Poland, they come into White Russia, and they're swept away by mainly the Lithuanians. They love their Torah. These people know how to learn. How much can you learn if you go to Hildesheimer's and you have to get a PhD? How much do you know at the time you get smicha? When I got smicha, all I knew was a few chapters in Yoredeya and maybe 200 daf gemara. Big deal. There's thousands of daf gemara. And there's a lot more than gemara. So much more goes with it. And Tanakh, Shnayot. Get involved in Shelet and Shuvah. There's no end. And they started to crave a Litvisher environment. Many German students went to Litta after World War I and studied in the Lithuanian yeshiva. My Rebbe, Rav Shmuel Eliezer Volk, Akelze, he was a London mufak. I write about him in Washington. Tragic. These were people that Hitler destroyed, killed 6 million, but he uprooted them. You understand what that means? Uprooted. They never could express themselves. They never could find their proper place. They came to America. How did we view these Rebbeim? Greenhorns. Read what Rakefet writes in Washington and read between the lines. You'll be a brilliant man afterwards. Take my word for it. You'll understand what I'm saying. Reb Lezer Volk told us, Bochrim, I made a good living in Telz. Half a day I learned with a German youngster who had very little background, a graduate of the Hirschian schools and Hildesheimer, and he paid me for being his Rebbe. Made a good parnasa. But you see, they craved more. They demanded that in Hildesheimer, the new Rosh Yeshiva after Reb David Zvi Hoffman died, the dean, the rector of the rabbinic school, 1921, they only wanted a Lithuanian Talmud Chacham as the head of the rabbinic school. No, who was appointed in 1921? Reb Avraham Eliyahu Kaplan. His father had been a childhood chavruta of the Chafetz Chaim. And he was an unbelievable individual. He gave lectures on tzitzit, according to Reb Yisrael Salanta, the Musa movement, and how that converges with Rav Shimshon Ful Hirsch's Perish in Chumash. They loved him. But Mori, we Jews, no mazel. When I learned in Hildesheimer in 22, they used to call up Rav Avraham Eliyahu Kaplan to the Torah, Yamod Moreinu V'Rabbeinu Rav Avraham Eliyahu Ben HaRav Avraham Eliyahu. His father died at the age of 33. He never saw his son. He's named after his father. Those of you who are Sfadim, when someone's named after his father, that's no big deal. We once had here in the Kollel a year or two ago a Brit. Rav Asher Weiss almost had heart failure at the Brit, because they're naming the kid. The father is naming the kid after himself. And Rav Asher Weiss, there's a picture in my office. They snapped the picture of the scene. And Rav Asher Weiss turns pale. And I understood what was happening. I said, Humeidot HaMizrach. Oh, then they felt better. But in the Ashkenazi world, when someone is named Rav Avram Elio, and Rav Avram Elio, it tells you his father died before he was born. Rav Avram Elio Kaplan Jr. dies at the age of 33. At the funeral, the students cried in public. Tell me, know what it means to be a Yekka? You tell me when a Yekka cries in public. Rav Yosef Breuer's son, Jacob Breuer, in his old age, heard me give a lecture here in Israel. He hugged me and kissed me in public. 200 Yekkas passed out on the spot. You understand? I'm not joking. 200. You can ask Max Wahl. He's an eyewitness. If his mind should only be well. Okay? They cried in public. The newspapers wrote about it. There was a change happening. Rakefet didn't need this type of mashgiach. In my office, there's a picture of my Rebbe of Musa, Rabbi Yaakov Moshe HaKohen. It's a different world. I have the only smicha Rav Lessen gave all his years in the United States. We had a big event in the Kollel in the late 80s when his grandson presented me with copies of Rav Lessen's smichot from his Rebbeim in Europe, and I presented them with a copy of the smicha he gave me. But, yeah, things are changing. Berlin is changing. The Yekki young man of 1920 is not the Yekki young man of 1850. His needs are different. His aspirations are different. His quests are different. My dear students, this all comes to a head with one individual. Those of you from Baltimore or Washington Heights will recognize the name. The man who would know it best is in America for a wedding now. You said it, Rabbi Shimon Schwab. Rabbi Shimon Schwab, you all recognize the name you have down in the Torah Shraga Library. Rabbi Schwab on Prayer. I constantly see that book, okay? Yosef Mordechai, you hit the nail on the head. Rabbi Shimon Schwab left Germany, came to Lithuania, studied in the Litvisha Yeshivat, and now he was troubled. On one hand, his parents told him, "We are disciples of Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch, Torah im Derech Eretz. This is the way you live, this is the way you go. Don't ever dream that you're not going to go to college. Not going to go to college? Primitive. More than primitive. Sinful. A Jewish challenge. Conquer the world. Meluot Haaretz V'Kivshua. Win a Nobel Prize. And make a Shechiyanu in public, as some of our winners from Israel have done when they won the Nobel Prize. You're a grandson of German Jewry." In Lita he was told, "Reb Shimon, you have a good mind. You're starting to learn properly. You have to master Kol HaTorah Kula. It's going to take you 999 years. There's no time to waste on foolishness on college, chas v'chalila." And he was caught between the devil and the deep sea, between the fire and the frying pan, between his parents and his rebbeim. Ellie, sound familiar? How many kids do you know who were caught in this dilemma? So what did he do, Rav Shimon Schwab? And here we owe him a great deal. And Diane Grunfeld, if Diane Grunfeld would not give us the story, we would have a lot of difficulty understanding what I'm going to quote to you later today and next week. A lot of difficulty. Rav Shimon Schwab sent questions to many Gedolei Yisrael. And his question was very simple. I am a Yeki. I am a son and grandson of devoted, dedicated disciples of Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch. My parents want me to go to university, want me to follow in their footsteps. On the other hand, I've studied in the Litvish Yeshiva, Labriot, and I am told it is forbidden to go to college, it is forbidden to waste time, it is not important for your Torah gestalt, just the opposite. The more Torah you learn, the more learned you will be, the greater the rabbi you will be, the greater the influence you will have. And I don't know what to do. Do I study my Rebbeim in Lithuania? Or do I follow what my parents, the tradition of Rav Hirsch, Torah im Derech Eretz? Fabulous. What a question. And then Dine Grunfeld goes on to give us one of the sources that we have from Dine Grunfeld. Without his recording this, we would not have it. He says, Rabbi Shimshon Schwab, when Dine Grunfeld already knew him, when he was a prominent American rabbi, first in Baltimore, and then the man who succeeds Rabbi Dr. Joseph Breuer as the Rav of Kehilat Adat Yeshurin, KAJ in Washington Heights, the bastion of German Orthodoxy in America. From out of that kehila come six grandchildren of Aaron Rakefet. That's not who you know, Vic. It's a different branch of the family. All I can tell you about my Yeki branch is when the kids were little and they would fight with each other, they would say, you're only a Yeki, do you understand? So I don't know how seriously to take it, but the eldest one gives my wife great nachat because he's in Mitzalel. And every last night they were working together. I went to sleep, they were working together. I think they finished after this affair began. It had to be after 11 o'clock. Okay, Baruch Hashem. Who did he write to? So he taka wrote to the biggest gedolim of the period. Among the gedolim, how many of you are of Polish origins? If you're of Polish origins, Brian, your grandfather was raised as a Gera Chassid. Right or wrong? Ask your father. If you're of Polish origins, it's a good chance you come from Chassidim, and a good chance you come from Gera Chassidim. They were hundreds of thousands strong. The Gera Rebbe in the 1930s was the third Gera Rebbe, was the Re'eim. Reb Avraham Mordechai Alta was a very famous Gera Rebbe. Gera Rebbe, knew all of Shas by heart, B'Kedusha, B'Tara. This was a Rebbe, visited Palestine 5 or 6 times between World War I till he was saved with miracles in 1940. Most of his family was wiped out by Hitler, but a remnant got to Jerusalem. Whenever he visited Palestine, he bought land. He was very smart, invested. The Gera Rabbeim are multi-millionaires until today. They bought up land in Tel Aviv, in Petah Tikva, in those areas where you bought. My father-in-law was offered a plot of land in Tel Aviv in 1935 for $100. Had he bought that plot of land, I would be able to purchase all of this campus and rededicate it to Grus, the Soloveitchik / Grus Center for Torah Hashem Tamima. But unfortunately, my father-in-law did not buy up the land. $100 big investment. Who knows what'll be here? You understand? Ugh, oh, the Gera Rebbe was so smart. When you go to the Gera Rebbe, those of you that have gone to the Rebbe, you don't leave a pigeon. You take an orange or an apple. Depends on the season. He gives you. He doesn't take from you. It's the Gera Rebbe, yeah. So he asked the Gera Rebbe, sent him a letter asking him this very question. And the Gera Rebbe did not respond. He may have been the only one who didn't respond. A little afterwards, the summer came, and it seems Marienbad, Czechoslovakia, was a big meeting place for Rabbanim and Gedolei Yisrael and Talmidei Yeshiva who came to the spas there. I would like to go there myself right now. I could use it. Okay? So it turned out that Rav Shimon Schwab, as a Talmud, was in Marienbad, and they told him the Gera Rebbe is here too. So he went into the Gera Rebbe, and Grunfeld, Diane Grunfeld, relates word by word. Went into the Gera Rebbe and asked the Gera Rebbe, did you get my question? And the Gera Rebbe said, absolutely. And this young chatzav says, so why didn't you answer me? And now I quote exactly his answer. Then I'll translate it. It's word by word here. Avadata minisht lerinim ken chachmat chisaniyot. Aber min daf hitten de kovet from a Rav Hirsch, de tzadik from Frankfurt, weil yis gewen a lebedik musa seifer. Quote, end quote. Certainly you're not allowed to study in a university. Absolutely. No question. But I couldn't write that to you. One has to be careful about the honor, the reputation of the Tzaddik of Frankfurt, meaning Rav Hirsch. He was a living Musa Sefer. And that I want to tell you, a living Musa Sefer is the biggest compliment any Jew can get. The biggest compliment. You understand? We live, we're Shomer Shabbos, we know how to learn, we can give a good shiur. And then we have endless machloket, I don't want to go further, scandal on top of scandal, you know in which world we're living today. If you don't know six words from Washington, you will not survive. The most important words in all of the 530 pages of Washington to Washington. Judaism is perfect. Jews are not. Got it? If you don't know the six words, you can't survive. I can't survive. I just heard of a scandal last week. A Talmud, I refuse to believe. A Talmud told me here. I didn't even want to believe it. Then, unfortunately, I checked the website and I saw the shul is looking for a new rabbi. So, I was good fashtanin that the Talmud told me the absolute truth. Did you figure out whose picture that is with Rav Elyashiv? Okay. How many times is there? Three times. Unbelievable, unbelievable. But if you have, in your lifetime, you meet one or two rabbeim that are living Musa Svarim, you're the greatest guy alive. You've had such mazel. That's unbelievable. A living Musa Sefer. As Schwab walked out of the room where the Gera Rebbe was sitting, the Gera Rebbe said to him, Gedenkst, junger Mann, a lebedik Musa Sefer, min daft hitten seine Kavod. Remember, young man, he was a living Musa Sefer. You gotta be careful about his kavod. That's why I didn't answer you. So here you see something amazing. The Gera Rebbe, and certainly of all the people Rabbi Schwab asked this question to, Rav Shimon Schwab, he was a kid yet, he didn't have smicha. He was certainly from the most extreme world. You know what Gera Chassidus is?
even today. Among all the Hasidiyot, nothing equals the extremities of care. I mean, it's unbelievable. Husband and wife never walk together in public. The wife walks behind the man. Go to Geula. Watch the Ger in action. You'll see what I'm saying. Look, who knew who is a Ger Chassid? Some wear it all week. Shabbos, Vaisa Zuckin. Look at the way they wear their socks. Nothing has changed in 250, 300 years. Unbelievable. Look at their shtreimel. You gotta be rich to be a Ger Chassid. Wow, that is a shtreimel. Wow. Whoo. That is a shtreimel. Ger Chassid. They are something. And they are powerful. And he, even the Ger Rebbe, wouldn't put Rav Hirsch down. Didn't agree with him, but please, I don't want to say one word in public against him. Make your own decision. You want to be a good, frum young man? Don't go to college. But don't broadcast it. Doesn't deal with the whole problem. How do you deal with your parents? But all right, I guess. You say to your parents, you were raised in 1955, I'm raised in 2015. What went over then for the Mashgiach was one episode. Today we need a different type of lifestyle. Okay? You'll handle it. But the question should haunt us. You're young men. What are your dreams? What do you want to accomplish in life? What do you want to be? Hey, wait a minute. The first dream, Shas, Poskim, learning, knowledge, Yirat Shemayim. Beyond, am I allowed? This is a serious question. These questions were never asked before. It's the 1930s. Alacha kama v'kama, these questions are going to be asked. What is this yeshiva university? Who ever heard of such a thing? Under one roof. A high school. In my time, a great high school. No scandals. Fabulous teachers. A great high school. My most beautiful years were the high school years. My rebbeim, my teachers. Ah, fabulous. A college. Graduate school next door. I started my work towards my master's. I have two master degrees already when I was a senior in college. I started courses in Bernard Rebbe Graduate School. Wow, what professors I had. Doctorate. Rebbeim, Gedolei Yisrael. Got on a bus in the Bronx and 20 minutes later I was walking on Amsterdam Avenue. 25 minutes later I opened the door to 102, I took my seat. I had to stand up when the Rav walked in to let him in. He couldn't get to it. I sat right here. He sat here. He couldn't get to his chair without my standing up and letting him in. Could you imagine a little kid from the Bronx, a dummy, a bummy, a cummy, whatever you want to call him, huh? And he's sitting right here, and here's Reb Chaim's grandson, Reb Chaim Brisker's grandson, relating to him. Arnold! Wow. So what is the halacha? Okay, before I go a major step forward, which I won't be able to finish today, let me give you some very basic sources that without these sources, you can't get anywhere in the responsa literature. The Rambam, Hilchot Yesodei HaTorah, Perek Dalet, Halacha Yud Gimel. It's a very famous Rambam. By the way, I have to tell you, generally in every yeshiva, it's customary to start the Rambam with Perek Hay. You don't learn the first four Prakim. You aware of that? Ha ha. You don't learn the first four Prakim because it's all philosophy, very difficult to understand at times, very confusing. So the yeshiva world, the first four Prakim, no one ever touches. It's sort of what they say about the Rav and his father of Moshe Soloveitchik, that both the Rav and Rav Moshe knew the Mishnah Torah backwards and forwards. But there was one tremendous difference. The Rav also knew Moreh Nevuchim backwards and forwards, and Rav Moshe never opened the Moreh Nevuchim. So we're going against tradition now, and we're looking at the tail end of Perek Dalet. It's Halacha Yud Gimel, the final Halacha. And what is the Rambam talking about? That this knowledge beyond Torah, philosophic, that was the heart of knowledge in ancient mankind, this knowledge that goes beyond formal Torah knowledge is called Paradise, Korinoto Paradise. It's an orchard. An orchard where you pick fruits. And he quotes the Gemara in Chagiga. You can find all the sources in the Nosei Kelim. The Rambam rarely says anything on his own. Abba Nichnasu LeParadise. Four giants went into Paradise. V'yafal Pisha Gedol Yisrael Hayu V'chachonim Gedolim Hayu. Lo kulam chayav barchem koach leida ulhasig kol hadvarim al gurion. And nevertheless, we know that some of them came out destroyed by this experience. One became an apikoros. One went out of his mind. It's a tremendous challenge. Not everyone can handle it. So are you allowed to go into the Paradise? Are you allowed to study philosophy, the humanities, literature? You can even say science to a certain degree can lead you astray. How old is the world? The big debate that went on, is it 5,000 plus years old? Or can it be millions? Can it be billions of years old? How do you relate to it? It was just a tremendous machloket with Rabbi Slifkin, Rabbi Nathan Slifkin, right or wrong. The world shook. The world still shakes. Interesting question. V'ani omer, and the Rambam says, and this is very unique formulation for him, and I feel, I want to tell you, she'ein ra'yu l'tayel b'padeis elam mi she'nitma le'kreso lechem u'basar. No one is allowed to go into the Paradis unless your stomach is filled with bread and meat. No bread and meat? What's going on here? Call one of these burger stores and tell them, bring in some bread and meat. No. The Rambam explains, V'lechem u'basa hu leida ha'asur v'hamutah u'kiyotze b'hem misha ha'mitzvot. And the Rambam here puts down the basic criterion, the basic understanding. We can go into the Paradis. We can conquer the big world. But only after we have fundamental basic Torah knowledge. The Lechem Ubasa comes first. And this is what the Rambam is posek lehalacha. You take a young man, teach him, give him the foundation. Give him Torah. Give him Yirat Shemayim. Build up his Torah gestalt. And then afterwards, can study whatever he wants. He'll be able to handle it. This is the Rambam. Watch.
Open up the Shulchan Aruch. All of us know you want a psak. You go to the Shulchan Aruch. Hilchat Tamatora, Yoredeya. Resh Mem Vav. Sif Dalet. It's a very famous part of the Shulchan Aruch. I would say this may be, what I'm going to quote to you, may be more quoted in modern times than any other part of the Shulchan Aruch because of what the Vilna Gaon has to say here. And the Shulchan Aruch is telling us it's based upon a Gemara, Chayav Adam L'Shalesh Limudo, Shalosh B'Torah B'Tav, Shalosh B'Mishnah, and Shalosh B'Talmud. And then when you learn, you have to divide up your time, and you have to learn Tanakh, you have to learn Mishnah, you have to learn Gemara. The Ramah has a Haga'ah here that it could be Bizman Hazeh, when you learn Talmud Bavli, you yotzei everything, because Talmud Bavli has Mishnah in it, and it has Tanakh in it, etc. Fine. It's not a simple matter. The joke in Lithuania was, I heard this from the Rav many times, but I've read it, they used to say in Lithuania, every Talmud Chacham knows his Tanakh from the Gemara. Alright, when you know your Tanakh from the Gemara, it's not the same like learning Tanakh in the state of Israel today in Eretz Yisrael. The study of Tanakh has become an art. And you can study Tanakh unto itself and you can gain so much and learn so much and go into your limb and see the Tanakh come to life before your eyes. So I'm not certain studying only Gemara really includes Tanakh today. It's a discipline unto itself. But be it as it may, that's the way the halacha begins. And then the Rama says, V'ein la'adam lilmod ki yimikra mishnah gemara v'aposkim anim shachim achareichem u'beze yikne ha'olam hazeh v'ha'olam haba. A person should only learn Mishnah, Gemara, Poskim, commentaries, and that will give you this world and the next world. Avolo lilmod shah hachmat. But you shouldn't study anything else. Wow. But then, he's a little bit lenient. Umikomakom. You are allowed to occasionally study other studies. V'zehu hanikra bein hachachamim tiyu b'pades. And he's quoting the Rambam here practically word by word. This is what our sages call taking a tiyul, a hike in the orchard. V'yein la'adam l'tayel b'pades rak l'acha shemilei kreiso b'asa v'yayin v'hu leida yisa v'heta v'dinei ha-mitzvot. And when can you take this to you? When your belly is filled with meat and bread. With meat and wine. When you know Shas, when you know Poskim, when you know Hadapaskin, when you know the Dinim, when you know the Halachat, only then. I'll come back to the Rama one second. The Vilna Gaon, and this is the Vilna Gaon who knew everything, including mathematics and science. The Vilna Gaon beats the heck out of the Rama and out of the Rambam, which is the source of the Rama. And if you look into the Haggad Hagra, Avoloda with Hapades, Lo Hu Velo HaRambam. The Vilna Gaon here, very sharp, very critical, says about the Rama, forget what you're saying. Neither you, and not just you, the Rambam, never really saw the orchard and never really mastered the orchard. Don't play games with us. A person should not go near the paradise. Now, very strident words of the Vilna Gaon. But those words had tremendous, far-reaching influence. But now let me come back to the Ramah. And let me share with you what I believe would be my Rebbe's approach. What does this mean? You can't go to high school, you can't go to college? Talk about the halacha. Have to know basa v'yayin, basa v'lechem, shas and paiskim. If that's the case, I know a guy named Donnie Rothkopf. He is 76 years of age today. He wouldn't even be starting high school. What does he know? He's still struggling to master Kol HaTorah Kula. And I got news for you. Nobody knows Kol HaTorah Kula. I heard from my Rebbe many times. Why do we use the word Talmud Chacham? It's a contradiction ab initio. If you're a Talmud, you're not a Chacham. And if you're a Chacham, you don't have to be a Talmud. And Mori Rebbe said, a student of Torah, if he feels he's a Chacham, he knows it all. He knows nothing. You always have to feel, I'm a Talmud, striving to be a Chacham. We never totally achieve everything, but we have to keep on striving. Well, if that's the case, when are we going to study? When are we going to learn? When are we going to conquer the world? When are we have to make a living, have to make panasa and dignity? What's going on here? If I understood my Rebbe correctly, the answer is very simple. It's a method. It's an approach. We can't expect a kid of 5, of 10, 15, 20, a kid of 50 or 60 to know it all. We're always learning. When I was Mesayim Shas the first time, many years ago, so I made a number of parties. The big real scene was in the Kollel. We were wealthy then, we had money. Kollel made a big dinner downstairs. We had a caterer. We could still use the kitchen. It was a different Gris. Mr. Gris was alive yet. It was money. Then I made a party with my grandchildren, little grandchildren. Now one grandchild, Binya. He's today fourth year joint MD PhD program in the Technion after 5 years in Hesda. So little Binya comes to my house a week later and he sees me learning Gemara, Bracha. And this little kid says to me in all sincerity, Saba, why are you learning? You just finished all these books. You just finished it all. And he was right. If you finish a mathematic book, you go on to the next. You finish a book on biology, you go on to a more advanced one. You're not going to go back to the book you studied in 7th grade and 8th grade. When it comes to Shas and Paiskim, it's ongoing. You never finish Shas, okay? Again and again and again. And believe me, I understand Masechet Eruvin this time. I'm now the third time in Masechet Eruvin in Shas learning. Better than I ever did before. I'll tell you why. Because I picked up a book with graphic computerized pictures. It is a pleasure. On every daf, whenever the Gemara talks about something, oh, made Merubal Parutz and vertical and horizontal and three tvachim and four tvachim and dalet amot and yud amot and alechi and, oh my gosh, I don't have to start guessing. I have
beautiful pictures in front of me. Ashreinu shezachinu l'kach. So I believe what the Rambam means, what the Shulchan Aruch means, and the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah spells it out. You give the youngster the feeling, the drive, the commitment, the vision. And of course, he will take it further. And this is what our day school education is based upon. This is what Maimonides was like. This is what Salanta was like. Today, Sar Academy. I can't vouch for Sar Academy, but I can vouch for Yeshiva Salanta. And these are what your high schools are based upon. And if you go further and go on to college, you go on to university, you don't stop learning. The commitment is there. That is the way I understand the Ramah. But I have to tell you, the Gon, wow, smack down the Ramah and let the Ramah know, don't think you're fooling me. I know where you got it from, the Rambam. And he didn't enter the Pardes either. Neither of you entered the Pardes. Neither of you succeeded. Okay? These are the sources. You can understand why there's so much controversy today. In America, this week, all the Rebbeim are going from here. The Gera Rebbe, the Belzer Rebbe. Big demonstration in New York against the state of Israel that they want to draft the yeshiva boys. That they want yeshiva boys to study and know the core curriculum. That they want them to have panasa and go to work and live in dignity. You have world of conflict here. Everything they're demonstrating against is, for me, halacha pshuta. There's no question this is the way we have to live. Milchemet mitzvah. Our state, economy. If you know the Chatam Sofer, Masechet Sukkah, I'll ask you a different question. Did you put on tefillin today? You're a medical doctor. You're a dentist. You're in the army. You're an accountant. You're a lawyer. You're a technician, high tech. Did you put on tefillin? You're not allowed to. The Chatam Sofer asked the question. Everything we do in Israel is a mitzvah. Can anyone tell me why? Binyan Haaretz, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, Oseg B'mitzvah, Patur Min HaMitzvah. It's a famous question. Rabbi Avadja, by the way, quotes this in one of his tshuva. This is the Chatam Sofer, Chidushim to Sukkah, the sugi that deals with the Chatan, Patur Min HaSukkah. New gentleman? The question is stronger than the answer. The answer is obvious, that the same God who commanded you to build Eretz Yisrael commanded you to put on tefillin and say the Shema and pray. So that's the answer. But the very question is fabulously enlightening. But take a look. What I believe in. All the Gayim, conquer the world, build the greatest country in the world, high tech, conquer cancer, what the Jewish mind can do. And do it b'kedusha, b'tara, with Shabbat, with Kashrut, with Tarat Mishpacha, and Limud Torah. And they're demonstrating in Bifnei Amveda, Bifnei Hagoyim in New York, the Gera Rebbe, the Belzer Rebbe. They say from the Rushina they're trying to press them to go because they're two Rebbeim today whose native language is English. The Sari Gera and the Biana Rebbe, the two Rushinas, the Sari Gera and the Biana, their native language is English. I don't have to tell you. I write about the Biana Rebbe in my book, Washington. Sometime I can tell you more stories about him. But I know him intimately from the time he was a little pipsqueak. And he's a great Rebbe today. And the Sari Gera Rebbe was his London. He was a Rebbe in London for many decades, and he came now to take over his father's place on the Israeli scene. And they're demonstrating, wow, clash, heads on, the Ramah versus the Vilna Gaon right before our eyes. My dear students, the question remains, who else did Reb Shimon Schwab ask? And what did they answer? And I'm going to begin next week's shiur opening up the Birchat Shmuel to you, and I'm warning you in advance, unless you are strong and firm and can hear extreme concepts, don't dare come to class, because you will have heart failure when I quote the heart of the Birchat Shmuel to you. And who was the Birchat Shmuel of Baruch Be'Leibovich, Talmid Mufak of Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik? And then we'll quote Rabbi Chanan, and I'll show you my theory, which I believe to be 99% correct today, written about Yeshiva College. And you'll start to understand that 1945 is not 1929, and serious opposition starts to develop against what is today Yeshiva University. So what did we do so far today? We said a bit of a background. I have a world yet to show you, but Rav Hirsch, three generations, Dayan Grunfeld, the Gera Rebbe, Avada Tominish. Certainly you can't, but you have to be careful. The covet of Rav Hirsch, can't say it aloud. The Machloket, the Rambam, the Ramah, the Hagot Hagra. Wow. We have stepped into a minefield. Now, I just want to tell you a comment. First of all, a dear student who gave me this cup, that's the Rebbe with Rabbi Leib Ayins in front of Mir Yeshiva. He's in Toronto today. So it seems there was a fundraiser for Why You There. So they honored Rabbi Leib. He does good things with NCSY, and he spoke. And he spoke about the influence this Cholel had upon him. But I wanna quote with you one thing he said in public, and I'm very proud that he understood me when he first came into the Cholel. It's an interesting story. I finished the shiur, has to be 10 plus years ago, and he's standing over here, and he says to me, I waited a long time to be your student. So I said, what do you mean? He says, well, I once heard the Rebbe speak in the OU Center in Jerusalem, and I made up my mind I'm going to be a student. I said, where are you from? And he starts telling me he's from a Lakewood family. His father's a Talmud of Reb Shneur Cutler. I heard of his father, and he learned in Mir. So I said to him, right as I first met him, I mean, I was a chatzuf. I say to him, are you running away from Yiddishkeit or running to Yiddishkeit? If you're running away, get out of here. If you're running to, I'm going to help you. Because a guy's telling me he's from Lakewood Mir, he's coming to study in YU, etc. I was chayshish. He understood me very well. He said that these words and my whole attitude helped him immeasurably. So I was very, very pleased that he saw through my comment. Now, Chaim Eiselman sent me some very interesting articles. This is Neshama Kalbach, who just declared she became a Reformed Jew. You have to read it to believe it, but I just want to say one thing. She performed at the Reform Convention. Probably 70% of the people are not halachically Jewish. I mean, let's say that. I've seen pictures of these Reform Jews. It's hard to find a Yiddish, someone who looks Jewish. The father was Jewish, the mother is not. The conversion, half conversion, etc. So, and she talks about Tikkun Olam. Nobody but nobody is opposed to Tikkun Olam. But remember, before we can worry about the world, we gotta worry about ourselves. So I always say this, Tikkun Atzmi, first take care of yourself. Then take care of the Jewish people. Tikkun Am HaYehudi, then take care of Tikkun Olam. But all of Yiddishkeit is not Tikkun Olam. But I wouldn't take it too seriously. When you come from brilliant families, a lot of times there's always an element Gaon, Shigaon. I don't want to elaborate further. I can give you 101 examples. There is a beautiful article published by Michael Helfand, Why We Need Yeshiva University, with all the controversy, because this was published in the forewords. And I'm very proud of the way he describes the world. Consider a world without YU graduates, and look into what he writes. Kol HaKavod. This is an interesting article, how much people make overseeing Jewish charities. Who is overpaid and who is underpaid. But I have to say, they go after Rabbi Marvin Haya. It's the way they went after Rabbi Israel Singer, who was the right hand of Bronfman. I gotta tell you, look, Rakefet doesn't deserve a penny. He runs away from the world. He sits with his books. He does his research. Twice a week he comes out in public and he gives a public shiur. People bother him to teach shalom and he tells them, you want to hear Rakefet, come to Grus. He doesn't know, what are you going to give up? But people who raised billions of dollars, bring in millionaires, build and do, they have to live in a world where they have to go out to fancy restaurants and they have to dress properly. They deserve it. Don't be so critical. Live and let live. That's basic to being a decent Musa person. All right, Rakefet, I hope does good things, but Baruch Hashem, he's happy to wear a simple shirt and not a fancy suit with a tie. This is interesting. Reform Judaism, they can't figure it out. They're now reboots on the youth. The youth will spit in their face without Shabbat, Kashrut, Tarat Mishpacha, commitment, without previous generations, without giving them a vision, without giving them the romance of the Torah people. You're not going to get anywhere. This is a nice piece by Rav Avinair, how much corruption we have in Israel. They just published the rating of, out of 177 countries, the state of Israel placed 36th. I will not be happy till we place number 2. We have to be 1, but number 2, absolutely. This is a very fascinating article from anybody in outreach, anyone who's going to be a Rav. It's a woman who had mental problems from a frum family, and her interaction with people from the Nei Yisrael community, and how it drives her away from Yiddishkeit. It's a sad story, but you have to remember, a person has to be a living Musa Sefer. I can't say it better than the Gerer Rebbe. Halavai, I should be a tenth of a living Musa Sefer. Here's a sad story out of Pittsburgh. I heard about this. A mohel, something was wrong with the Brit, and they're suing him. But what's interesting here, they kind of involved in the whole question, how do you supervise mohalim? And this is a difficult question, particularly outside of Israel. In Israel, it's a little bit better, because here you can supervise. It's a small country, and the Rabbanut is here. In theory, Israel should be better. But you gotta remember, no one is perfect. I can make a mistake. You can make a mistake. I always, when my brother started studying medicine, Rabbi David Lipschitz, until that point, Rabbi Tzu Valkar Rebbe used to say to my brother, be like your big brother. Be like Aaron. Learn day and night. The minute he told Rabbi David, he's going to Einstein. Because when Einstein was first beginning, and to get a reputation, they took kids who never, my brother never graduated college. If you finished 3 years of college and you had a certain average, Einstein took you. So my brother is a butcher. He's an ophthalmologist, a surgeon, etc. And he never graduated college. We always say he went to, later, why you wanted to give him a bachelor's, but he wanted $25 for the certificate, you know, to publish it, print it. My brother said, go fly a kite. Why does he need it? Why? He lives in Israel. $25 was money then. It was the 1980s. Anyway, so Reb David said to my brother, the minute he tells him he's studying medicine, be very serious in your studies. You can't afford to make a mistake. There's a big difference if a rabbi makes a mistake or if a doctor makes a mistake. So I don't know, you know, a mohel is only a human being. Halavai, we shouldn't make mistakes. This is a story of post-Mendelssohn. I know the story, but it really, these people were assimilating. The fact that the woman didn't cover her hair proves nothing. They were Machalos Shabbos, Ochin, Abedet, and Trefat, and very soon intermarried. So I'm not overwhelmed by what they found. Once again, I mentioned this yesterday. I'm not pronouncing it the way you do, but the OU announced, and this is fabulous, quinoa is now kosher for Pesach with OUP certification. So be aware, Rab Heschel Shechter has went out. There was a big machlokes between him and Rabbi Belsky, and they say quinoa is the healthiest food in the world. I've never eaten it in my life. I gotta figure out what it is. Finally, if anyone wants, very fascinating article. I spoke about this yesterday, about the Erev last Shabbat, two Shabbatot ago, the one before last. Was it up? Wasn't it up? And here from the Shtiblach and Katamon, they called all the Rabbanim, they called the people in charge of the Erev, and until today, we don't know whether an Erev was up or not. But they were Chayshish, and I spoke about it yesterday, would fall down. This is a book that I have two copies of. If anyone knew the Groner family, it's the Lubavitch family. The Reb Leibel was the assistant to the Rebbe, was the Rebbe's Gabbai, should live and be well. This is Reb Leibel's niece. She was married to my best friend, Rabbi Dr. Professor Tzvi Groner, Zichronim Levracha. And it's a beautiful book that children put out in her memory. It's a very interesting book because she is a granddaughter of Reb Chaim Yosef Zonnenfeld. And yet she went to Beis Yaakov. She was very open-minded, very broad. And it shows how she was able to retain Torah and yet had broadness to her, a beautiful photographer. There's some very nice pictures that she took. Finally, this is a Talmud of mine from the Kollel, and he does a shiur on Reb Moshe Feinstein and America. It's in English. Those of you interested, be my guest. And here, this is in Hebrew. This is from Rabbi Yaakov Adas, who is a little bit open-minded. You'll get a feeling of how they're opposed to serving in the army. It will burn your ears. I wouldn't miss Sunday Shia for all the rice in China and all the quinoa in South America. Reb Aaron Cutler, stars. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. Ryan, the news about Toronto was all over the place. They're pushing it here. So, don't unplug that. Press it off. You know how? That's okay. And now unplug it.
It's on all the news here. You know why? So people shouldn't complain about what happened here. If Toronto... Okay, yeah, like that.